I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome to Spark My Muse, everyone. Today we're going to be talking about mental health and the story of Michael Weinberger. He is a speaker that's sought after to talk about mindfulness and his own story about getting his mental health into recovery, and his story is really exciting, and we'll be sharing it today. Thank you so much, Michael, for being my guest today.
Lisa, thanks for having me.
So maybe at first you can share a little bit about your story. I know you really had some serious struggles even from an early age.
Absolutely. I was diagnosed incorrectly in 1994 with attention deficit disorder. In that same year, it turned out after giving me some treatments for attention deficit disorder, which are typically stimulants, we determined that I was actually diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 1. And for those of you that are familiar with type 1, I predominantly suffer from mania, which is defined as, positive, excessive positivity, I'll call it, right? I'm someone that believed that I could take over the universe and nothing was impossible. And at the same time, I suffered with a lot of rage and irritability and frustration. And so giving that individual a stimulant was really the last thing I needed. I was in high school at the time. I had recently gotten a driver's license. I ended up having my driver's license taken away because I couldn't stop speeding. I ended up being thrown out of high school, not from a grade perspective, but from a, hey, we can't contain Michael in the classroom perspective. And so I would come in for a few classes in the morning and they would let me go to work early in the afternoon so I could just stay focused and be productive.
And so obviously you were misdiagnosed and given the wrong medication. So it wasn't working out for you at all. How did that resolve?
It resolved by, once they started to realize that the episodes were getting worse and more extreme, it wasn't helping, right? And so we were able to say, hey, these thoughts aren't getting better, right? This behavior is not getting better. We're not getting more control here. Right. And so the purpose of medication is not here to make us happy or solve all our problems. Right. It's simply here to provide an upper bound and a lower bound for us to live within. And I had no bounds at that time. And so I had a lot of suicidal thoughts. I had a lot of anger and rage and behavior that I just couldn't explain. It was an internal feeling. I was in therapy at the time. There were days where I'd go see a therapist every day of the week because I was just trying to keep the wheels on the bus. Most days, right? And so when I finally got the wheels on the bus and started getting a better, more controlled medication regimen, life started getting better.
Wow. So at what point is this? Is this in after high school?
So this is slightly after high school. At that point, I was also self-medicating. As I go off to college, I start drinking. I start eating compulsively. Things just, as a young kid, I thought if I take all my medication on Thursday, I could catch up for not taking it Monday through Wednesday. Right. And so now I'm self-medicating and I'm making up my own medication regimen and things are just spiraling. I ultimately get expelled from one college. I ended up going to four colleges before getting my degree. Things were just out of hand. There was a time where I called my mother up and I said, Mom, I'm going to need you to come pick me up. And she said, Michael, it's the end of the semester in a few weeks. I'll come get you then. I said, well, I've just been expelled and I'm now homeless. How about you just come get me right now? Wow. So that was the sort of extremes I was living in. And I honestly just thought everybody lived this way.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And so, did the drinking feel like you could slow down, or what kind of effect did that have on you? And then, in addition to that, did you sense that you were going to have to try something else, or were you just trying to just keep your head above water at that point?
I was trying to keep my head above water. Drinking wasn't the solution. It didn't even kind of get in the way. I was overdosing on a regular basis to try and stop the racing thoughts. Ultimately, at graduation, I got a job, and I ended up starting to work 20 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Wow. What was your education in, by the way?
So I have an undergraduate degree in computer science. And so I got a degree as a, I got a job as a programmer, and I started working. And, like any good company, they have a young, smart kid, that's able to work and work without stopping. And they took advantage of it. And I'm not, there's no fault, there's no blame, right? I harbor no ill will. But hey, I was willing to keep coming, so they kept giving me things. Ultimately, the relationship didn't work out, and I had some impulse control issues in my 20s, where I bought a house, and 2 weeks later, I quit my job and started a company. 6 months later, I lost all my money and ended up moving from New Jersey to Michigan, and not even telling my family I had left.
Wow.
Just a lot. And then I got here and I ended up gaining 150 pounds and getting married. It sounds like, if you want a list of things not to do in rapid order, it's, quit your job, buy a house, move states, get married, gain 150 pounds.
Yeah, you're on a real fast track, but it sounds like you're really ready to you're on a collision course. And I know you hit a low point and you couldn't do it anymore. And then what happened after that point for you?
That's right. And so in 2009, I had been in Michigan for 6 years. I was in a new relationship. I was divorced and starting over. And it was my birthday. I was 32 years old. And I was on the phone with a therapist and I couldn't control my thoughts. And I overdosed. I decided that I couldn't deal with it anymore. And I took my pills. And my psychologist said, "You got to tell your girlfriend, who's now my wife." And I got brought to the hospital. And they kept me for 10 days. And it took me, 6 months of 2009 to really recover, to really get my meds in check, to really believe that I was okay and I was going to make it. But I could tell you, I haven't been hospitalized since then. And I celebrate that. It's been 6, 7.5 years, since I've been in the hospital, and things are much, much better.
Wow. And so what kind of you mention it mentions on your website that a combined approach of cognitive behavior therapy and a 12-step strategy brought you the most relief and recovery. Maybe you can go into a little bit of what that is for people who've never heard of it. I know there are a lot of people out there who might not have the same fast-paced kind of collision course story, but they might be struggling with the same mania or anxiety or trying to cope in some way that might relate. There's a lot of people who struggle with pieces of what you're talking about, but they might not have any idea on what solutions are out there.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you bring that up, because I think an important takeaway from my story and an important story that I tell everyone is that I am 100% confident that everyone has problems, right? We are all the same, just to a differing set of degrees, right? I'm fortunate that I have to take medication to address my problems, because I at least have a diagnosis and it's something I could work on. Right. I don't know where I am today if I just have a slighter version of my diagnosis. Right. And so I could tell you when I went to the doctor for the first time and they said, "You have all of these, this is what you have, this is what your diagnosis is." I was like, Thank God.
You're
Because I'll
right.
tell you, if I went to the doctor and described, like if I described those five things happening to me within 12 months, and he was like, you know, that's pretty normal. I honestly would have been like, holy crap. Like, if this is normal, I'm in trouble. Like, I don't know how to make it. But, you know, one of the important parts here is, there are tons of treatment modalities out there for people. CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy, and the concept there is that it can help you deal with undesirable thought behaviors. And it's the concept that thoughts precede feelings, which precede behaviors. And the goal of CBT is really to change your beliefs, right? And for some people, that's enough. And they could use that therapy and they could improve their lives and get some relief. For me, it just wasn't enough, right? And so then you add some 12-step recovery. And what's this primary focus? Its primary focus is addiction. And what is the core principle behind 12-step recovery? You can only you only have control over yourself. Right? And so the goal in 12-step recovery is humility and acceptance. And you can see that there's a difference between the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors modification in CBT, and you only have control over yourself, but there starts to be a little overlap, right? Changing your beliefs and acceptance start to become similar. And if you couple in mindfulness, which everyone's talking about lately, mindfulness, the focus here is to deal with depression and anxiety. So you might have a glass of wine every night, but you might not be an alcoholic, right? You might suffer from a situational depression, but you might not have undesirable behaviors, right? You might just, but mindfulness is the core purpose there is emotional over and under engagement leading to negative outcomes. Right. And so when you can't explain how you feel or your over or underreaction, right? Your overreaction is getting frustrated. Your underreaction could be depression. It could be withdrawal. But the goal for mindfulness is compassion for self and others. You know, when you now start to combine these things, you know, I created a tool which we'll talk about in a little bit. But basically, the concept is these treatments, CBT, 12-step mindfulness, they need to be carried and integrated into everyone's life, right? Because if you don't integrate it to your life, you don't start to see the changes and benefit from them, right?
And so it was a whole new way of thinking for you that you had to, like, how long would it take you to, it was a whole mind frame change for you, right?
It was a whole mind frame change. And, you know, I had probably gone to 20 doctors and I had probably been on over 20 pills. And I finally went to a therapist in 2012. And her name is Dr. Denise Brooks. And she says something that's just fantastic. She says to me, "Your diagnosis doesn't matter." And I'm thinking to myself, wait a sec. My entire life is based on my diagnosis. What do you mean my diagnosis doesn't matter? And what she meant was, I am simply a series of symptoms that require management. Right? So if I take away the diagnosis, right? So what was happening to me was I would overreact, underreact, become rageful, and I'd say, that's the illness. Well, it's easy to blame the illness because then you're not responsible. Well, the reality of the situation was it was Michael who was getting angry, frustrated, right? I was the one interacting with my illness. And so once I was able to use these treatments, like, oh, I'm having a negative thought. Let me catch that negative thought. Let me let that negative thought go through. And let me see that I've succeeded. And I was okay, right? All of a sudden, that's a little CBT, that's a little mindfulness, right? Let me realize that I'm having a thought and it doesn't mean it's going to blow up my world, right? That's a little humility. You know, to think that all my thoughts are facts and to think that all my facts are reality, I don't want to be there anymore.
Well, that's really interesting because part of it's like this, it really is two things. Part of it is owning up to it and taking responsibility. It's not this thing imposing on me and I'm a victim. But at the same time as it's taking responsibility, it's also not being super ashamed, like, well, there's no hope. This is just how I am and I'm stuck here forever. So it's even though it's taking responsibility, it's also in some ways distancing and saying, this is a thought, but it's not who I am to my core. And there's a way to manage this. It's a really interesting
That's
one-two punch thing.
exactly right. And so, you know, the way it's been described to me and the way I view it is I now kind of witness my diagnosis responding to situations. Right? I start to realize that you know, I'm frustrated with my wife about some decisions she's made with our children. That doesn't change my own value as a human being. That doesn't change her value as a human being. It's simply something I experienced. Right? And, you know, for example, if I get upset about something I've done, right? Let's say I don't say the exact right thing during this interview, right? It doesn't mean I'm a bad person. It doesn't diminish my self-worth or self-value. It simply occurred. I acknowledge it. I move through it and I still have that same value. Right? And so a lot of the implementation of cognitive behavioral therapy, 12-step mindfulness, as well as dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT, you know, the concept there is that there are triggers that create reactive states. And the purpose, the goal behind DBT is constructive coping for triggering situations.
Well,
Right?
unpack that
And
a little bit.
so.
I know less about that one. Can you give me an example?
So DBT is really, its focus is self-harm, and it's called dialectical behavioral therapy. And so the purpose behind dialectical behavioral therapy is the communication you have with yourself and the world around you, right? And so what happens? The treatment, the therapy of DBT is based on group sessions and not connecting with an individual therapist, right? There are group sessions, there are skill-based sessions and homework for you to adjust your behavior and the conversation you're telling yourself in your head, right? And so when you have a conversation in your head that says, this is going to be terrible, you know, CBT is more the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors leading up to it. The DBT is more, this is terrible, let's stop that. That's a conversation. Let's stop that conversation. Let's change how we integrate or have a conversation about the situation. Right? And so when I combine cognitive behavioral, dialectical, 12-step, and mindfulness, they're all kind of empirically supported treatments that aim at kind of increasing your own happiness, increasing your own wellness. Right? And so the use of these empirical supported treatments can result in rewiring of your brain, right? So you're now better able to handle and process events that happen in everyday life, right? You're no longer stuck having life imposed on you. When life happens, you're able to react and handle it properly. And if you're able to react and handle life better, what does that result in? It results in decreased stress, decreased anxiety, decreased frustration, and decreased irritation.
Yeah. It really does spiral. As one thing goes bad, then you get more frustrated and more hopeless and more, concerned, and then creates other problems and so on and so on.
That's right. That's right. The little voice in your head, you know, how often, you know, people can probably experience this right now. You know, how often have you stubbed your toe on your bed? And then the next thing you do, like you slam your finger in the drawer. And then you pick up a bill, and of course, it's a bill that you can't afford to pay. You know, and your little brain is saying, of course, you got that bill. You deserve it. You stubbed your toe. Oh, wait a second. That's not true at all.
Yeah.
But your brain is, we are pre-wired to be negative, right? Of the five core emotions in your brain, only one of them is joy, right? The other is anger, fear, despair, worry, anxiety. All of those are negative. It's difficult to find joy in those situations.
I didn't think of that. That's true. It's outnumbered.
Right, it's outnumbered, and so like it's you know, and so one of the things that I practice regularly is gratitude, right? And so let's look at stubbing our toe, and let me give you the most extreme example of stubbing our toe, right? You could be grateful that you're able to walk, right? You could be grateful that you could afford a bed to stub your toe on.
Right.
Right? It's these little simple things that people take for granted.
Right.
Well, what if I gave you a wheelchair and you were homeless?
Right.
Stubbing your toe, a lot of people in those situations are probably looking for a bed to stub their toe on.
Right.
So to go a step further, I created an app. It's called A Plan for Living. And part of the app is the happiness formula, and it's gratitude plus spirituality plus mindfulness equals awareness, and awareness creates happiness.
Okay, so unpack the formula a little bit for me.
So the first step is gratitude. And so if you wake up every morning and you practice gratitude, you're able to start rewiring how you view the world. Right? And someone that doesn't practice gratitude is not going to be able to even contemplate running out of gas means you have a car to drive. Right? They immediately think of the negative. Our brain thrives on the negative. But if I'm now able to take these things that occur to me in life and make them grateful, it doesn't eliminate them from my life. It just makes me care a little less. So if I'm grateful for having a job, the traffic becomes less meaningful, right? If I'm grateful for having a house, the upkeep on the house becomes a little less anxious, right? And so additionally, like I have a father that was verbally and emotionally abusive to me my entire life. He's on my gratitude list. Why? Because I'm grateful he's taught me how never to treat another human being. But I'll tell you, when I was first asked to create a gratitude list, and many people have told me they have this experience, the first thing on my list is I'm grateful I only have to create this list once. That's the first thing on their gratitude list. The second thing on their gratitude list is I'm glad I'm done. Right? Because they just don't, it has no meaning to them. It had no meaning to me. Right? How could I be grateful for my healthy kids? Well, when you start to have that conversation out loud, there's a lot of people that don't have healthy kids. I pray for those people to make sure they're given and have what they need. And I'm grateful in a non-condescending, very humble way that my kids are healthy. Right? I'm grateful I had a father that taught me how not to treat people. I'm also grateful he showed me what a father doesn't look like. Right? My kids are going to have such a better parenting experience because of my father. Right? And so now my gratitude list, and I could do it with you real quick, it'll be less than 30 seconds. I'm grateful I got divorced. I'm grateful I have an abusive father. I'm grateful I have failed businesses. I'm grateful for my diagnosis. I'm grateful for my failures. I'm grateful for my medication. I'm grateful for my healthy kids. I'm grateful I land on my feet. I'm grateful I moved to Michigan. I'm grateful I could see the phone I'm entering my gratitude list on. Less than a minute, I have 10 things that could reshape how I interact with the world.
Yeah, it's a total tweak of your like purview of life and how you're gonna decide to see the world.
That's right. And so, when I'm looking at the world and there's two choices, there's two paths to walk down, at least I could have a little bright light with me. to kind of help me know that I'm going to make it no matter which path I choose. Right? And now if we take spirituality, you know, spirituality is the it's not religion. Spirituality is anything that happens in the universe that I can't explain or I can't control. And so I'll give you an example. It's a real simple test to determine if you're capable of being spiritual. By the way, you know, the spoiler alert, everyone is. However, to give those that are more prone to being spiritual, how many of us have tried to lose weight, right? Mm-hmm. And we walk up to the scale and we take off our clothes, and for 1 second before we step on that scale, we either look down at our feet or we look up into the air and we close our eyes. Who are you talking to? Because I'll tell you something, that's a spiritual moment, right? Because you're praying the outcome on the scale is what you want it to be. Mm-hmm. But you have no control over it. Mm-hmm. You know, how many of us have said, and I'll use my own words, God, listen, just give me a good number today and I'll eat well today. If you just make this number be good and let my clothes fit today, you know, I'm gonna be okay. I'm gonna be better today for you. Mm. Right? And by breakfast, I forgot about that conversation. Yeah. Right? But if you now have this spiritual list, you have an opportunity to pray or wish or hope for those around you and for yourself to improve your outcome. Mm-hmm. So I'll pray for my daughter, my son, my wife, my marriage. I'll pray for my medications, my own humility, my own willingness to continue doing this. I'll pray for friends trying to lose weight. I'll pray for friends going through a divorce. I'll pray for clients that haven't that owe me money, you know, because mm-hmm. and I could go on at length on why each of these happen. But that is what spirituality is. Mm-hmm. You know, if we now take the next step in the formula, mindfulness, this is something that you can capture throughout your day. It's not something that happens when you put on yoga pants and go into a fancy room in your house that's dedicated to the practice of mindfulness. Right? It's something that happens at a red light when you breathe in through your nose and out through your nose and let the air rush over your pituitary gland. Right? It's the opportunity for you to connect as a person to your, you know, the mind-body connection comes into play. And it allows you to be present. And so a simple way to practice mindfulness is if you, you know, if you've ever been cut off in traffic, right? How many of us have gotten rageful or angry or frustrated?
Right.
How many of us have exerted enough anger to reverse that guy from cutting you off?
Right.
And so I'm going to give my contact information at the end of this email, if at the end of this show. If anyone has exerted enough energy to reverse the cutoff, I'd like them to call me because I want to speak to that guy. Mm-hmm. I've never done it, and I've exerted lots of anger. You know, I've screamed people off the road, and it has never changed the past, right? And so what I've learned is you can exert energy to change the past. The mindful experience is experience the emotion, learn to be present with it, and move forward, right? Now you could expend that energy on something positive. Right now you can expend that energy on being present and on improving your own happiness, right? What's the focus here? To reduce stress, anxiety, frustration, and irritation, right? And so practicing that gives you an opportunity and to do it throughout the day as many times as you can.
I have a question about mindfulness. As you're experiencing it in the moment, do you get to a point of practicing it that you don't have the reflex anymore and the reaction anymore, and you catch, or is that you catch it sooner? You catch the reaction sooner and you realize what you're feeling and thinking sooner?
So I think it's, unfortunately, Lisa, the answer is both. What happens is you are able to capture and identify the experience sooner. It's not going to prevent you from being cut off. it's going to prevent you from screaming, from being cut off. Right? And so now my daughter, my wife, people around me will notice me breathing through my nose. And they'll be like, Daddy's upset.
Oh.
Well, actually, kids, Daddy was going to be upset. Daddy's catching himself, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so what happens is the rewiring of the brain says, if you could visualize this, your left hand in front of you is the experience you're having, your thought. Your right hand is your action.
Mm-hmm.
How do many people live? I don't know if you heard that, but my hands just clapped together.
Right.
Your hands are tightly woven in front of you, just squeezing as tight as they can. Why? You get an upsetting email from a client, bam, right? Your kids spill milk, bam, right? But what happens if all of a sudden the bam is separated, right? All of a sudden the milk spills and it doesn't matter. All of a sudden the upsetting email, what I try and teach myself and those that I work with, the upsetting email actually occurred long before you read it.
Right, yeah.
Right? And so exerting any amount of energy, frustration, anger towards that email is not you're trying to undo the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for me, mindfulness is just about down-regulating.
Yeah.
Right? Our brain says upregulate. That's what our brain naturally says. Our brain says tiger, run. Right? Mm-hmm. Fight or flight. Let's engage.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I try now to teach my brain, argument coming. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. What are real threats? And there aren't many.
That's right. That's right. You know, I was just on a plane ride and I sat next to a wonderful couple. And when I got on the plane, they were shifted over and one of them was sitting in my seat.
Mm-hmm.
And I simply said, you know, you're in my seat, and they reacted and said, no, we're not. And so old Michael would have been ready to engage at that point. What, you know, because old Michael would have been like, are you calling me a liar?
Right.
Well, no, they're not calling me a liar. they don't even know me, right? Mm-hmm. They're just existing in the universe. I'm bumping into them. So I said, well, here's my ticket. This is the number, right? Well, you're wrong. And I immediately could have reacted. What? I'm wrong. You know, are you telling me I'm a bad? Are you telling me I'm stupid? Well, no, that wasn't. Here's a fact, right? And ultimately, they said, "Oh, I see. You're right." And they moved. Another person from another row actually chimed in on this conversation, and you could just see how the world is so attuned to overreaction.
Hmm.
Well, you don't want to know how the plane ride went? It went amazing. Hmm. And you want to know what I did on the way home? I showed the people I was sitting next to pictures of my kids. Right? And why was I able to do that? Because I didn't overreact to the initial antagonist.
Hmm.
Right? I caught myself and I actually, if you go back to my formula, gratitude, spirituality, and mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful I had a plane ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I prayed for those people because they were wrong. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I was mindful because I didn't overreact to the situation.
Yeah. You know, Michael, I'm wondering, you came from a background where your father was abusive. And I also came from a background where there were a lot of threats in my environment as a child my upbringing and things like that. And I think I was always sort of prepared for war and conflict. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so I think that I've had to really unlearn a whole bunch of things too, because you don't need to be ready for fight every single minute of the day and every single interaction. And I think what has helped me too, it seems really similar, is going in thinking of people as friends, until they give you some other really obvious reason to not think so.
Sure.
And so it was interesting how you could distance yourself from your emotions. And I've noticed that too. Like if you're in a real neutral situation, if you think, you know, they're my friend, or you're thinking lovingly toward people, then when they do something, you're not thinking that, oh, they're trying to get me, or there's a problem. And that like you're saying, by the end, you're showing them pictures. It's not that you're best friends, but that it was never a warfare situation to begin with, and that you never were going to take it like that. And that's really shows that mindfulness will change the situation from, I mean, not just neutral, but like positive. And, you know, you never know. You could get a client out of that situation. You could, it could really move somewhere super positive.
That's right. And so, you know, and maybe this is for a longer discussion, but I'll tell you, when I engage with people in that instance, you know, a lot of it would have thrown me back to my experience with my father. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's battle. Let's scream over this, because that's going to resolve the situation faster.
Yeah.
Right. Like, let's spill milk and scream to see if we can get the milk in the glass.
Right.
You know, and so, but for me, you know, when I start to have those feelings, I'm now just aware of it, like you're saying. Yeah. I'm aware that it's making me feel like my father. That didn't turn out productive. So people are not my father.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you start to look at CBT and DBT and addiction and mindfulness, right, I have thoughts. These thoughts are creating feelings. These feelings are going to create a bad behavior. That's CBT. DBT, all of a sudden I have this reaction to my father's last reaction. Mindfulness, all of a sudden I'm starting to feel agitated and overreactive. You know, I'm over-engaged, right? And then addiction, I can only control myself, but I'm going to be yelling at them. You know, in that single instance, I combined all of these modalities, mm-hmm. and then I put it into a formula, right? Because I practice gratitude, I practice spirituality, I practice mindfulness.
Right.
I practice all of them. What ultimately happened? I became more aware of who I was as a person.
Yeah.
And as a result of being aware, I sat down with a smile and focused on what's truly important. My kids, right? My family. Right. I focused on being grateful that I'm on my way home.
Yeah. Yeah. And so moving on to, you created, because of your background in computers, then you were able to create an app to help yourself. But then now you're offering this to people to help them out, too. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
That's exactly right. So I created the app with the sole intention of helping myself. Mm-hmm. Right. And so as I started to help myself, I started working with others and coaching others. And what I started to realize was when I was failing, I wasn't failing in therapy. Right. Mm-hmm. I wasn't failing at support groups. Mm-hmm. Right. I was failing in between support groups and in between therapy sessions. Mm-hmm. And so I created a tool that is always with me, that is judgment-free, mm-hmm. right? Always available, and it doesn't require you to drive anywhere. It measures my progress. And so the tool now helps get me into a groove and to integrate the treatment that my therapist has taught me into my daily life, mm-hmm. right? Because I can assure you that your listeners are hearing me speak today, and they might think these are great ideas. But if you don't download the app and start using it, they're just ideas. And that happened to sound like a shameless plug. Let me explain it a different way, Lisa. If you read a great article about how you're going to learn how to run a 5K, and the steps to learning how to run a 5K are to get up and walk for 10 minutes every day for 2 weeks. If you don't start getting up and walking, that article becomes an informational piece that you don't integrate into your life. Mm-hmm. You never end up doing the 5K if it's just a bookmark on your computer. But if you print it out and you start carrying it with you and you write down, here are the 10 days and here's an X or a check mark for every day I walked, that starts to create this habit. It starts to change your behavior. So the integration is where my tool comes into play for those people in treatment, as well as for those that don't think they need treatment, right? Because you could still benefit from the different modalities.
Hmm. Yeah. And so it integrates, what is exactly does it integrate in, and how, like, how does it, what's the interface like for somebody who hasn't seen it?
So it's on your smartphone. When you open it up, it is able to send you reminders for the day. It's able to send you medication reminders. It's able to send you tips and tricks. It asks you a simple question every day. How are you? How happy are you? And after you answer that question, it then walks you through the formula, which is gratitude, spirituality, and mindfulness. It then allows you to set up a mini or micro goals for you to accomplish that day. And that's it. What's nice about the app is you can't edit the future and you cannot edit the past. So how many people have woken up the following morning and gone back into MyFitnessPal or Weight Watchers and wrote down what they ate yesterday? Well, that you weren't in the moment. So how, you know, how accurate is it in a plan for living? You record it in the moment because you're present and you move forward. Right? Now, you also are able to track your food. So you can see how your food relates to your mood and how present you are while you're doing these things.
That's really neat. And then what were some of the things you noticed when as you started using it for yourself?
You know, I started to realize that, you know, I still have ups and downs. You know, I started to realize that there were days that I woke up at a 2 and went to bed at an 8. Right? And that's really the most significant, right? How many days do we wake up thinking the day is going to be terrible? And how many days would we choose to stay in bed or choose to do nothing to only have an amazing outcome? Right? Because we can't predict the future, we don't know. But I do know that if I take the necessary steps to move forward, I can feel better. You know, I can tell you that I have more productive conversations with my therapist because I'm in tune with how I'm feeling. And I'm able to do, you know, one of the key aspects of the app is the social sharing. And so I'll explain to you how it works quickly. But basically, every gratitude, spiritual item, mindfulness, or goal, I'm able to share via email, Twitter, or Facebook. And so after I put in that I'm grateful for my incredibly supportive and loving wife, I send her an email.
That's awesome.
And you know what? When I come home, let me explain to you how this works. This is how it works in my house, and I assume for most married guys. If you come home at the end of the day and tell your wife how beautiful she is, what's her reaction? Most of the time, what do you want? What do you want, or we're not doing it tonight? And I'm like, okay, hold on a sec. This is not the, I'm just trying to give you a compliment. Well, we're not doing anything tonight. I'm like, well, okay. Well, now it creates an environment of no compliments. But if I send it to her during the day, I actually have a better relationship with her when I get home. Right? All of a sudden, my relationship is better because I'm able to share my thoughts and feelings with her in a non-what do you want kind of communication. Right? And I'm able to do that for my prayers, for my gratitude, for my goals. I'm able to send my food to my nutritionist. So at the end of every day, I could email, I could set up my food plan and email my nutritionist what I've been eating. And so a great way to use the tool is, at the end of the day, send it to your nutritionist. And if they're willing to receive it, they could see what it's all about, you know, what you're actually eating.
Yeah, there's good accountability with that. That is a lot of the pieces that sometimes when we're in isolation from other people and we can really sink into a slump, or that's part of the mindfulness too, that's that social piece.
Absolutely. And there are challenges in the app as well. So let's say you want to challenge 5 of your friends to be more grateful, to report their happiness, to report, to be more spiritual, to complete their goals, right? How often are you, how much more likely are you to complete a goal if you know your friends are doing it?
Right.
And I can tell you that I have friends where I'm on text chats where we all report how much we weigh every Monday morning. And it's not because we're accountable to each other. It just makes us honest to ourselves. It's the type of challenges that we have. So my wife and I challenge each other every week to be more grateful, to be more spiritual. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we end up both using the app more. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing your story and making a tool like that. I think that's going to be really helpful to a lot of people. And where can people find that and find out all the things that you're doing?
Absolutely. So if you visit my website, aplanforliving.com, mm-hmm. I have a resources page and a blog page. You could also email me at M Weinberger. So it's M-W-E-I-N-B-E-R-G-E-R at aplanforliving.com and on Twitter at aplanforliving. But basically, we're also available in the App Store and the Play Store.
Okay, good. Well, thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate your story, sharing it with us, and best of luck as you continue in your journey. It's wonderful to see that you turned your life around and that so many things work together to make you have so many things to be grateful for, and even more so than even just a few years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me.
Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too. Please stop by and check it out.